to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
Total photonic reversal.
Photonic reversal.
Protonic reversal with your host, Conan Neutron. Broadcasting from a secret underground lair in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
A gigantic middle finger to everything that is rock about music, rock and roll, and corporate power.
The thing is, though, if you don't laugh, you're going to go on a killing spree with sharpened nails.
Don't it.
Confidence of a hero or a fool, I wasn't exactly certain which.
Could not be more professional.
It means something.
And they got away.
You know, that's my take on it. Like, what's yours?
Protonic reversal!
That's like a science thing, right?
Indeed, it is. It is a science thing. It is a science place. It is a scientific fact that we are all up in your face. It is time once again for the one, the only protonic reversal. Welcome to it. First episode entering year 11 of protonic reversal. That's right. For those keeping score at home, last episode was the epic length 10-year anniversary show. They featured 13 different guests. It was a lot of work. And so I decided to take a month off. Well, a month off. It wasn't really off. I did a tour with Part Chimp. Did Caterwaul. I did plenty of things. We did Brainiac. That was crazy. But took a month off from the show, again, to take a little bit of a break. So hopefully everyone had a chance to catch up and listen to that great 10-year anniversary episode. Dwayne Dennison, Ian MacKay, Bob Burt, Sonic Youth, Cody Wills, Dale Crover, so many great guests, including maybe the last interview with Steve Albini. Definitely one of them, which, again, I'm not going to lie, that was somewhat of a motivating factor, taking a little time off as well. So, but I'm back at it. Very pleased to be talking tonight to Jake from iFlies and Backslider. And it should be a raucous good time as we enter into the summer. But before we do that, welcome to Conan Neutron's Protonic Reversal. I'm your host, Conan Neutron. I'm a rock and roll lifer that's been touring and recording for 24 years, most known for the band Conan Neutron and the Secret Friends. Music is a huge part of my life, and I use the format of this very long-running podcast to talk about music with musicians whose work I enjoy and respect, but who may not be household names. This is episode 389. Now, if this is your first time listening to the show, archives of it are available for free. No ads, no sponsors, no kidding. Protonicreversal.com. However, if you want to support the show and get episodes sooner, $1 a month at patreon.com/protonicreversal will achieve that goal. And if you like the show or even just a single episode, please feel free to like, subscribe on your platform of choice, share it around the internet, and even leave a review. All that helps people discover the show. It beats back the almighty algorithmic overlords. And it's just a darn nice thing to do. Aw, isn't that nice? So, yeah, iFlies, Backslider, this is the, he's a dude that plays the rock, and I'm excited to have him on. There is a, I guess we can still call it new, it's January, right? It's not old. New record by iFlies, self-titled one, and there's a lot of stuff going on with this excellent Pennsylvania lad. Let's welcome to the show. There you go. Hey, Jake, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, man?
Took a month off. I don't know how to freaking work anything anymore. Yeah. My the gyroscopes aren't gyroing. The flux capacitor needs recharging. All this stuff.
The science has got to start sciencing again.
Exactly. Got to. So January. That's not old, right? I mean, I feel like in this day and age, like anything that's not this week is old, but
totally.
It's still a pretty new record. Ripper of a record, self-titled by iFlies.
Thank you. Appreciate it. We're very excited about it. As the folks always say, I think it's our best work.
I was just talking about that. I was having a conversation with someone who was like, "Look, I know everyone always says this." and you should feel that the last thing you just did is like the best thing that you did, right? If you don't, then maybe like when you're like, I don't know, it's okay. That's not necessarily a good feeling. No, but I think you guys sound very fully realized on this record. You sound very comfortable with what you're doing. You're pushing the songwriting a little bit. You know, I think you're in a good spot.
Thank you. Yeah, I think you kind of nailed it. This is like the band where I feel like we sound like the band we wanted to sound like.
Right.
Kind of this whole time, and kind of figured it out a little bit. You know, the time off that the world had or whatever. I think. Put some things into perspective for us and kind of gave us a little bit of a focus after it did, after I guess it did the opposite for the first chunk.
Right. Well, the first thing I became aware of you guys was the Tubelard record, which was had an unfortunate timing to come out right about when COVID did, if I remember correctly.
I think it was March
20th. Yeah, we were busy canceling a tour. That's what I remember most about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, boy, I can't wait for this to be over in the summer.
Yeah, totally.
What an inconvenience.
What would probably still stand as the biggest tour I've ever done was supposed to happen like 7 days after that record came out.
Yeah, yeah.
And we rescheduled it a couple times to be like, oh, no, we're going to do this like 75% already sold out tour with Full of Hell and Primitive Man this summer. It's gonna be fine. Oh, we'll do it in the fall. It'll be fine. Oh no, we'll do it in January. It'll be fine. And then eventually,
I guess this is not gonna be fine. I don't know. Well, so I'm curious because you're a band that I mean, obviously came to my attention on the Torch Tour, but I knew the name before because I was like, oh, all right, I think I know what that band sounds like. Some Petula Clark downtown sort of, you know, old school grooves. Yeah. You know, it's a good signifier.
We don't attempt to be very mysterious by any means.
No, it's like the movie Planet of the Apes. What do you think you're gonna get with this? It's a Planet of the Apes. Yeah, good guess. Quick study. But tell me how the band came about, because I know Backslider's been around from before, and also, another thing, there's no Spencer in iFlies now too. So address either one of those origin story.
Okay, cool.
And Spencer both at your leisure.
Totally. Okay. So I'm trying to think, I guess the genesis of the band dates back to like mid to late 2018. And so we had Backslider had the year previous parted ways with Patrick, who is the drummer of iFlies. He used to be the drummer of Backslider. We kind of set a different idea of where we wanted the band to go. Funny enough, he kind of wanted Backslider to come a little bit closer to what iFlies became. It was kind of like, hey, we still want to play like fast. And he was like, but what if we didn't play fast? So it turned into the thing where he's like, all right, well, this is going to work out. So we stopped working together on that project. And I know that you're familiar with Multicult.
Yes, I am.
The always amazing Jake Kreger, who used to play drums for Multicult, legendary of Triac and the Archaics and stuff. He ended up joining Backslider and kind of like helping us take that ship where we wanted it to go. And so there was a moment where things were like a little bit weird, I guess, because Logan, the guitar player, vocalist of Backslider, and Pat were like very close friends. I knew them sort of as an entity. When I joined Backslider, it was like
gestalt entity
fold of these two dudes. That it was their thing. And I think just by nature of like the time put in and how weird it is to like break things off and whatnot, things were like a little weird with mainly the relationship between like Logan and Pat, with me kind of like in the middle of it. So like, I wasn't really sure what it was. Me and Pat never had any bad blood. There was never any bad blood anywhere, but it was this sort of like navigation thing that was
a little awkward
for a moment. Yeah. And then so Spencer at the time had just moved to Philly, and him and Pat had been talking about starting a project. And Spencer's main thing was like, I want to do something, but I don't want to play fast. And Pat was like, let's go.
Speaking my language. Yeah.
So Pat had been sitting on like the refs for like 6 or 7 songs or something like that, something in that ballpark. For a while now, something that he was going to, a project that was like a recording thing that he was going to do with his ex-wife. And, and then he just kind of, parked on it for a while and then busted it out to jam with Spencer. And so they had a couple of jams, and Pat had it in his head that like, that I should be the dude to play with them. They were like talking about trying to find a bass player. And he had hit me up about it, and I turned it down the first time because I was already kind of immersed in four different projects at the time, and I was just kind of like didn't want to like shake up things too much at home with my partner at the time. And
it's a lot. Know, I mean,
be like, hey, here's another thing I'm going to do that's going to take me away from everything. Blah, blah, blah.
Great news.
And, I remember a couple of weeks after I said no, I was out to dinner with my partner at the time, and I had brought up all like, oh yeah, you know, like I was considering doing this thing, but like turned it down because I figured time was going to be an issue or whatever. And she was literally like, wait, like Spencer, like your friend from Full of Hell, right? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, why aren't you doing this? You know, that's going to be like built-in opportunities to be able to just like, you know, get to play more shows and do things that you like to do and whatever kind of thing. And I was like, yeah, that's whatever. And that same day, Pat hit me up again to be like, hey dude, are you sure?
Right.
And I was like, all right, man, you know what? Let's jam on this stuff. So over the next couple of weeks, we got together a couple of times and I like learned the songs that they were working on and they were fun. And then, Pat was like, we got asked to play this show coming up. Do we want to do it or whatever? And I was like, well, what are we going to do about vocals? And they're like, oh, you have to write lyrics. And I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, oh, you're going to be the vocalist.
Oh, did we not mention
like,
that? Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, wait a second. I haven't sang for a band since I was like fucking 17 years old. And it was like a shitty crust band, you know, like I was like,
right.
Prepared for this, you know?
Yeah. You're not Pavarotti over here. Yeah,
and Pat literally was like, just listen to your talking voice and tell me that this isn't the perfect thing for this band. And I was like, God damn it. Like, all right, whatever. So I kind of figured some shit out, wrote some loose lyrics. The first show we did, I was like shooting from the hip on half of it straight up. Like I had like structure ideas for vocal patterns, but I was just kind of talking shit. like as lyrics basically.
Sure. Yeah.
For the first thing. And
like you do.
And then, so with that, in that moment, we were a three piece. I was playing bass, and, my most active band outside of that was Backslider. And I played bass in that as well, but I fancy myself a guitar player. And I was kind of like, man, I want to play guitar in this band. What if we got another guitar player or we got someone to play bass, and I can play guitar. And so we went to go record the record with Kevin, who, is, you know, also plays in Triac. He's the producer for Full of Hell, Pianos Within the Teeth, like all kinds of stuff, like, you know, Integrity and whatever, you know, big time record making guy. And a good friend of ours.
It's on
and,
his resume, big time record making guy.
Big time record making guy, Bergston. he was like, we were like, let's go in there. Let's basically like make this record. And then when we're like done tracking stuff, let's get a feel for how he feels about it. Maybe we can get him in on it. So right. I cornered him in his kitchen while we were like doing guitar tracks, because I kept being like, oh, I have an idea for a guitar lick to go on this thing. And Kevin's like, dude, you go play guitar on this band. I'm like, yeah, don't worry about it. I'm just gonna throw this little thing on, whatever. And then I was like, by the way, Kevin, you notice how there's that extra guitar stuff. How would you feel about playing bass? And he considered it and was like, I'll get back to you. Like, we could talk about it. This could be cool. I dig these tunes or whatever. And then there was something came up. I think it was, I think it was just that we were going to do some dates with Multicult.
And, all right, sure.
And like, and Jake and Kevin are like longtime best friends. And I was like, hey, I think we're going to do some dates with Multicult. Like, do you want to come and like do the thing? And he's like, yeah, fuck it. And he's just been in ever since, which is great. So like through the strength, of course, of, I don't like to pretend like these things aren't true, through the strength of having Spencer in the band as like a recognizable name in like extreme music noise and whatnot.
Yeah,
we got some interest early on from people just being like, hey, I want to hear what you're doing. Hey, I want to hear what you're doing. So we sent some stuff around to a couple of people, and Thrill Jockey got back to us like pretty instantly. And they were just like, hey, let's do a record. Do you want to go back in the studio and like record a side B and make this an LP? Or do you feel like it's a complete thought? You know, and we were like, yeah, we want to stick with this as our first release and do the thing. So they sort of like, begrudgingly, and I only say begrudgingly because they don't really release a lot of EPs on that label, they're like, we'll do a 12-inch EP of this stuff, and then like gave us a deadline for an LP, which became Tunnel Alarm. And that was exciting because I'd never worked with a deadline before. I'd never worked with and I thought it was awesome. Like, I was like, yes, like I thrive off structure given to me by someone else.
See, now I'm with you. If you give me a deadline, I'm like, great. I that's perfect for me. Yes. I can now like get all the achievable goals set up, get all my baseline set up, meet all my benchmarks. That makes me happy. And I know people that freak out when they have a deadline. They like suddenly like analysis paralysis, they get like red eye fever. I'm like, that I'm the opposite, man. Give me a deadline, please. Do not leave me to my own devices for forever because
force
I'll never stop tinkering.
Force me to commit to things, you know, like
absolutely
is like is and I'll give you the best I can do. because that's the way I feel like I function best, and I think it was really kind of exciting for all of us to operate that way and do it.
I think there's something about the uncertainty and, like, for lack of a better term, the danger of it too. That it forces you into falling into things like, okay, your first decision is probably going to be your best. Like, let's stick with this.
Yeah.
You know, like let's. You know, and if you go out of your comfort zone, like it gets a breezy air, even if the music itself is not breezy in any way, shape, or form.
Totally. That absolutely,
it's inexorable. But like if you listen to that, as opposed to like these super tightly composed, like, you know, just labored over for years and years and years records, with some exceptions, I think that you can find that there's a different energy to it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That's I thought a lot about that actually. You know, obviously. Steve Albini's been a large topic in conversation for everyone lately, RIP, of course. He said something that I really liked when he was talking about, it came up when he did that Ask Me Anything thing, and someone was asking him about what had happened with, like, the Cloud Nothing sessions and how they had kind of, accused him of or whatever. I don't know what the temperature was on the sort of, on the discourse, but it was like, it seemed like he wasn't really engaged. And that he was, like, kind of distracted the whole time and all kinds of stuff. And he was talking about, focusing away to keep focus kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I feel like deadlines kind of give me that, where it's like it's going to be the thing that snaps you back in, but also, like, it also keeps like the ADHD kind of, like, able to continue working, but also keep it reined in a little bit. And I don't know, those things kind of rang true for me in a similar way where, if you, like, give me a deadline, I'm still gonna, like, fuck off a little bit, because, like, I'm a fuck off person. But also, like, it's gonna help me give you something that I think everyone's gonna be happy with.
It makes that a member of the team and not the leader of the team.
Yeah, absolutely. That's well put. Yeah, absolutely. So moving along.
You got
the deadline for the double art thing, and I think we, like, worked swimmingly with that. We were all really proud of that record. I'm still proud of that record. And it was fun because that was the best representation of that lineup that had Spencer in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, we just had, like, the time and, like, the space of 25 minutes for him to like really do his thing that he intended to do for this band, which was, like, textural stuff. And, like, he didn't write a lot of riffs for this band. Cause also, if people don't know, he also writes pretty much every riff ever for Full of Hell.
Yeah. It's like,
and Reaper's Gong and stuff this too. Yeah. So it's like, he's a machine with the riffs.
When you do that, it's nice to get out of your wheelhouse and do something else too.
Totally. You know? Like, that was the kind of thing, like, his biggest role with some of that stuff was being like, all right, cool. Like, Jake and Pat have, like, these things laid down for, like, how the riffs are going to go basically. And then he comes in with, like, his weird fucking machines and then just the weird ways he plays guitar and the things that he does, be like, what if we did this weird fucked up thing over this right here? Or even there'd be parts where I'd be like, because my brain doesn't work that way. Like, we don't do shit like that anymore because he's not in the band. Because, like, I'm not going to pretend like I can or that it's something I'm good at. Where I'd be like, oh, we have this part here where I'm not going to have vocals. I don't know what you could do, but maybe you could fuck it up. And then he would, like, roll in with some crazy weird fucked up shit.
Sure.
That, like, it's perfect. You know, it was almost annoying how perfect it was every time.
Because he's really good at that Baroque textural stuff.
Totally. And he would just be like, oh, I was thinking about putting this weird fucking machine thing over this part. And I'm like, oh, cool. Here we go for the next 3 hours while you fuck around with this dumb thing. And it's like 10 minutes later, it's like, oh,
yeah,
nailed it.
That's great.
That's fucking awesome. Like, cool, let's move on. Like, that's sweet.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's trusting the people that you're working with too. That even if you don't understand it, and I find this to be even among seasoned musicians sometimes, that, you know, you don't need to immediately understand it. Like, what you need to do is, like, hear how it sounds in context with everything. Because sometimes something can sound so dumb, and you're like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And you're like, oh, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. It rules.
Actually, you actually just really got to the seed of everything that I sort of skipped over that I think is the magic in this band for us and why it continues to be satisfying for us is Pat, our drummer, writes probably 70% of our riffs. Dude can't play, and sorry for saying this, Pat, dude can't play guitar or bass to save his fucking life. As far as, like, anyone, like, you know, like, nobody wants to see him do that. He doesn't want anyone to see him do that. You
sure
know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
But he comes up with all these ideas, and it's the same kind of thing. He'll come sit to me, he'll be like, all right, so I got the dumbest idea ever. He always intros it like that. And I'm like, okay, I believe you. And he'll show me some real dumb shit, Because also I come from like a technical playing background.
Yeah.
So I overthink things too much. It's like hard for me to simplify shit. So he'll come with these like 3- and 4-note fucking riffs that don't even make sense to me at first. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. That's dumb as hell. Like, you know, what is this? And he'll teach it to me. And it'll be like weird for me to learn because it's like doesn't feel like music.
It feels kludgy somehow. Yeah, sure.
And then he gets behind the kit and he's like, yeah, just keep doing that. And then he like throws up the beat he's got in mind behind. I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah. Then comes.
Yeah, there it is. And then every time I'm like pumped. I'm like, I could never write this. This is so cool. Like, let's fucking go. You know.
Context is everything, man. Yeah.
Totally, absolutely. And that was like a big point for this band, is, you know, like everyone's background was in like playing grindcore and shit. And like all this kind of stuff. And I was just like, we want a band that's just like simple and effective and to the point and just like in your face. Nothing's a mystery. Everything just like fucking, this is what you get. Like, and
there's no secret prog. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And I think there's sort of the beginnings of Pat kind of bringing something to the table the way that he did. And then kind of, especially in that era of time, like ending it with like the textural additions that Spencer was bringing to the table, made things really fun and it worked really well. And then, I guess I'm trying to remember exactly timeline wise. I've smoked way too much weed, so my memory for time is pretty bad. But basically, at a point, Spencer moved back to Ocean City. So like him and his partner had split up, and I think maybe it was some COVID related stuff too. Like just like, you know, everybody's shit was all fucked up. So he was like, "I'm moving back to Ocean City. I'm gonna move back to Philly eventually. Shit'll be cool." And then we did like a one off EP for Close Casket Activities with 4 songs on it, and then we did. We did a tour with Inner Arma and Yautja in December of 2021. It was kind of like one of the first tours that was like happening, and then shit got canceled again right after. It was like 2 weeks later, all my friends' tours got canceled again because it was like that when it came back again. So we got lucky and did all that, but basically, like
I remember because it was like, oh no, stuff's happening, I'm missing out. Oh wait, it's canceled now. Okay,
actually, I was good to not book a tour for that probably January.
Not to immediately turn around to me, but that was my actual reaction, which was kind of funny because it was sort of like that's the kind of way to play it in a comedy show or something, right?
Well, think about how heartbroken everybody was in March 2020 when everybody had shit going on and they kept canceled. To get your heart broken the same way twice for the same fucking reason.
I mean, that's when I really leaned into this show. I mean, I couldn't do anything else. Mm. You know, it was like literally nothing else I could do. So, and I was sitting around staring at the wall, you know, stare at each other, wait till we die.
That's when I started listening. I remember just, you know, the noise rock now thing was like super happening during the lockdown, as I'm sure all internet groups were or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing someone pop up in one of the interviews you did, and I was like, oh shit, that's that dude I met in Milwaukee. You got a podcast with like cool people on it that rocks. And I remember that was when I started listening to the show, was during all that. And you were,
which I think,
you had a lot of shit coming out.
Yeah. I think like it had been going like 6 years at that point, but definitely 2020 is when like it went from, you know, like it'd been more or less kind of static and then like, and guess what, man? All these people that were like, hey, I don't have time for podcasts. You have time now, bitch.
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely. I mean, like I say that cheekily, but like, you know, it's one of those things that it wasn't just this show. It's the fact that there's a lot of great shows out there that kind of found a new audience because people were kind of forced to slow down a little bit and forced to engage with media in different ways. And so therefore, something like this that I've more or less been doing the same show for forever, like it was able to like find an audience as many others were. And I also like the fact that there was a lot of new shows that like were just people, I don't know, let's try to Instagram live. All right, sure.
Totally.
You know, the more the merrier. Bring it on.
Totally. I mean, like there's no shortage of shit people want to talk about. There's no shortage of shit people want to be nerds about.
Yeah.
You know, and all those things are cool. I do love the jokes around like, you know, we don't need new white dudes with podcasts anymore.
I know, right? Yeah.
On paper and like statistically, of course, I'm going to agree. But then, you know, there's guaranteed to be something that comes out 6 months from now that's exactly that. Then I'm like, oh, this dude's fucking totally scratching that itch I need and the thing, whatever. You know.
I mean, from a statistical standpoint, it's going to suck because there are so many white dudes that fucking suck. But like,
that's almost the case
with everything. Sorry,
that
he's
is
alone.
The case with everything. Yeah.
On a long enough, like, you know, curve, right? You know, like everything's gonna be terrible. But like, but there is there is something for kind of the forced contemplation that came.
Absolutely.
Requested or not, during those times,
a lot of big shifts in my life that I think contributed to me being a happier person than I was pre-pandemic. I think right. came from a lot of those hard moments. I did a lot of facing myself. I did a lot of like, you know, having to be real with myself, being like, tell myself yeah. the fucking truth for once, you know. You can't run from it anymore. It's exactly. right here.
there's okay, no tours to go yeah, on where you yeah. can avoid it. Yeah, exactly. Totally. Totally. No, so but it's interesting to me that so as mentioned, Tavellard comes out just like 2 weeks after like it all became like really real, right? I mean, yeah. just the worst. And I've had a few folks on who were lucky enough to like hit, you know, hit the mark right there where that's like when it came out. Yeah. And I feel like in most cases, people were so freaked out that like kind of it took until like summer or so before people were really kind of absorbing new music in any palpable way.
Yeah, totally.
And I mean, there's not much you can do about it, right?
Totally. Like, I mean, it was one of those things. I mean, even so actually that also that kind of that fear and like and also that kind of just that card being dealt to some of us because of the times that our records came out or whatever was yeah. a big kind of plays into a big part of the next part of where I was going actually.
Sorry to interject to talk about myself, but
no, it's cool. It's cool.
I'm off my game.
This is how conversations actually work. I'm just amazed that I remember where I was.
Well, hey, from the aforementioned weed, sure. Yeah.
What you said, after we made our, like, technically third record, but you know, second EP, the one that followed Tavellard was Exigent Circumstance, and that was the last thing we did with Spencer because he had moved down to Ocean City at the time with intention to move back to Philly. Him and his like newer partner at the time got close. They're married now and shit, and they're fucking doing great. But he just kind of during that he realized he needed to make some changes in his life. I think his like touring had started to happen again. We did the tour with Anarma. He came with us on that one. And it was a good time. And I think he did a full of health thing right around that same time before stuff got shut down again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's got a lot of anxiety, in general, like he's, you know, like diagnosed like high anxiety disorder of some sort kind of thing. And, and so he hit me up and he was saying, hey man, I like really hope that this doesn't come off the wrong way or like whatever, but like, I'm going to leave iFlies. I need to get out of the band and whatnot. It turns out I'm like not going to move back to Philly. Him and his partner ended up like getting a farm and stuff down in Ocean City. Oh, and wow. They're like raising chickens and doing all this
if you,
cool
if
shit.
If you're buying a farm, awesome. You ain't going anywhere, man.
No, totally. Exactly. He literally and proverbially like bought the farm. Yeah. So,
sure. Yeah. Okay.
Which is great. And he's, yeah, and also with lovely. With also his relationship with Full of Hell, I remember, you know, talking to Dylan about it because those were, you know, we've all been old friends for a long time. And talking to him and kind of, he hit me up and he was like, hey, like, I heard what happened. Like, is everything cool? And like, you know, I'm sorry that this happened. I was like, dude, like, shit happens, like, whatever. And he goes, haha, like Spencer was talking like he was going to quit Full of Hell too because he was just so stressed out by like some of the things that kind of come along. I think the reopening of things and all that. But they worked it out, you know, to where they got another guy who also plays in his band Reaper's Gone, which if anybody hasn't heard Reaper's Gone, that's like Spencer's current weird fucked up rock project that's really fucking good.
Yeah.
But his one of the members in that band with him ended up becoming the international guitar player for Full of Hell.
Yeah, so like, he
Spencer
goes
doesn't
out.
Leave anymore.
That's right.
He won't leave the country anymore.
So he gets the Mad Scientist stuff.
Yep.
Which is like in his wheelhouse and,
yeah.
and kind of, I guess the only thing I can think of is sort of Brian Wilson it to a certain
sure,
degree,
yeah.
you know, totally. Which is I mean, to say that he's the mad genius coming up with like the stuff, but he's not going to be out on the road.
He's the freaky fucked up genius. He's coming up with the stuff, but yeah. like all the pieces to the puzzle.
Not that it sounds like the Beach Boys, but there's just not a lot of other examples. So.
I mean, there's some parallels there.
Some little parallels.
the ways in which that it's like, somehow accessible and truly twisted at the same time, I think.
Right.
Is,
yeah, sure. Is absolutely.
But yeah, so like they got that dude. He plays guitar for all the international stuff and Spencer stays home. And then now when they tour the States, they tour with two guitar players. So they're even more potent live.
Yeah.
And it's this whole thing. And when I see him now, you know, we've had Reaper's Gone come play a handful of shows with iFlies. And, you know, we see him now. He's just like, I see it in his face. He's just less tight. He's less anxious. He's yeah. a happier dude, and he had to figure out how to get there, you know. And
confirm.
I think anybody's close to him, you know, or anybody who could fucking hear this or know about this is and should be happy for him because he found out how to make the thing work and keep kind of like having output. You know, if you've heard that new Full of Hell record, it's fucking incredible. Produced by bass player of Idolize, Kevin Burtson, is like, it's great. And it's, and the thing's all working. And then, and that played out in a way that where he wasn't going to be an Idolize anymore. And we were, nobody was upset with him, but I will say we did expect to get dropped by our label and we did expect to get dropped by our booking agents.
Well, cause that's kind of like, so what I always say,
we know why people paid attention to us right out the gate. You know what I mean? Like when we got on tour with Torch, if I hadn't known those dudes since I was a kid from growing up in Florida / their tour manager, shout out Daniel Halal, wasn't like, hey, this is that dude Jake's new band and it has Spencer from Full of Hell in it. We should take them on tour. Yeah. Like that, you know what I mean? Like out, like that wouldn't have happened. All kinds of stuff wouldn't have happened. But I hit up Bettina from Throw Jockey. And I was like, hey, I totally get it. If you don't see it as worth it to do another record with us, especially considering what happened with the last one and Spencer's not in the band anymore, blah, blah, blah. And she was like, y'all got fucked in 2020. That wasn't a fair shake on all the things. Basically, she was like, because it went the way that it did, I can't offer you a bigger budget like I normally would for a second LP, but let's do another one and see how it goes.
Great.
So just in that, we were just like, okay, cool. Thank you. Like we have a budget for a record and we have somewhere to go with this again. Same with like the booking folks, you know, those people kind of knew us and whatnot. And they're like, hey, you know, you've shown that you're willing to work and whatnot.
You're willing to put in the time. You're going to do the work. You're not a big pain in the ass. You're not drama. Right. Totally, you know, it's totally. Which is amazing how much of it boils down to, are they a big pain in the ass? Are they drama?
Yeah. For sure.
But I think also when you have someone that's like a more famous name with it, it'll get the foot in the door for sure.
Absolutely. But
if the music isn't there, that's all it'll get you.
Yeah. And that was what Bettina said too. She was like, your songs and your records are like already speak for themselves.
Yeah.
You know, she knew the dynamic of the stuff. She was like, you know, she's like, I know that it's not like Spencer was bringing the lion's share of the material forward. So it's not like the band's going to sound like it's come from a completely different angle or anything. You know, she was confident enough in all that to kind of give us another chance. And so far it's working out. I mean, we were in the red on the first two records we made with Girl Jockey, and this one brought us out of the red on all three.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you.
It's mean feat in this economy.
Yeah, for sure. And she wasn't confident that wasn't going to happen. That was going to happen either. She just like genuinely like likes our band and thinks
she believed in the vision.
Shot, you know
she believed in the vision. She again, the acknowledgement that like you were kind of dealt with a raw deal with not being able to do the things that you want to do around it before. I mean, that's different to me. That's the difference between most of the times between an independent label and like a major label.
For sure.
You know? Not that major labels even care about releasing records anymore, but you know,
we talked a big game about wanting to put in the work, you know, and we didn't get a chance to show it. And so she gave us a chance. She's giving us a chance to do it again, which, so far, it's working. I mean, we did a headline East Coast tour the week our record came out, and when I tell you every single show was so much better than we expected, like we brought our record release show in Philly to capacity, and then like all the rest of the shows, it was literally like, also anyone who knows Kevin, our bass player, sweet man, and I don't say this to say that he's hard to be around anyway, because he's not. He's actually a delight to be around all the time, but he's like kind of delightfully curmudgeon-y. Doesn't really have a whole lot of like uplifting things to say about stuff. And it was like 5 days into that our first like proper headline tour, and we're selling a fuck ton of the records, and like people are showing the fuck up, and he looked at me, he's like, dude, this is tight, what the fuck's going on?
That's great.
And then we did our European tour and did the Roebling thing and like all that stuff. People were driving hours to see us, had people singing our lyrics at almost every show.
That's so cool.
Shit that I've been touring for 20 years now. This year will be 20 years of touring for me. And that's the first time I've ever had any.
That's amazing. Like that. Congratulations. That's lovely.
Thank you. And it's, you know, if Bettina hadn't given us another shot, you know, to do the thing. And if folks hadn't been so gracious with still thinking we're good with the loss of the big dog.
Yeah. The famous guy isn't in there anymore, but still good. No. And that's something where, you know, a band, I've done plenty of bands. They're great. They put on a great show. They make great records and nobody cares.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't matter. And then
especially,
I know bands that are like
noise rock shit, man. It's absolutely. Like, this kind of music is like, it's the ceiling's very low.
And sometimes it's because like the people are just genuine freaks who have no social skills. And I say that with peace and love in my heart. And sometimes it's just, I don't know. It's just happenstance, you know, and like there's no rhyme or reason to it. And there is, nobody likes to admit it. A lot of it has to do with luck too.
Absolutely. You know? So much a huge part of it. Absolutely. Time, place.
Yeah, but that said,
if
you make the journey itself the destination, like if you really enjoy the process of doing it, then it's the work becomes its own reward.
Totally. It's like, yeah, growing up and playing like punk rock and grinding crusty shit and like all that kind of stuff. And,
yeah.
And still wanting to do it after, you know, when I had a back surgery last year and like all this kind of stuff, you know, just like
you're in a basement with like 20 kids that smell horrible. Like, what am I
totally? Doing and I still do that shit, you know, and like, and I'm not gonna stop.
Yeah,
but it's like, but that's if it's ever gonna be worth it, you gotta love all that stuff. And then if you get, you know, moments like I don't know, I guess how iFly's having a halfway decent year so far.
Yeah, because you're
that's just like sick fucking frosting on the cake, you know.
I think you got that show with Horrors coming up at TVI.
Totally.
Recording, right? That should be great. They just played Caterwaul. They were smoking, as you might imagine. I mean, like,
yeah. That new record smokes too. I tell you what, that shit is good.
It's serious business. Business music. But that's super cool. And it's, you know, I'm always happy to see like bands being able to connect with an audience, you know, it's sort of like you, with all of these tools for alleged connection out there, you think it would happen more often. Perfect example, my friends in Chappile, right? I mean, yeah. Jesus Christ. Like, because when we first played with them, I was like, oh, cool. These nice Oklahoma boys. They're awesome. They seem like their band's cool. They seem like awesome fellas. And the next thing you know, it's like, oh, my God. Like,
doing the kind of stuff that they're doing, like making a record that sounds like their record sounds.
Yeah.
And playing the shows that they're playing is remarkable as fuck.
Yeah, well, and here's something else. And believe it or not, I was thinking about this when I watched the Cyndi Lauper documentary yesterday. Because the fact that when she had her first solo record, like she'd been doing it for a while. It was not like she wasn't a kid. She like it was young presenting, but like same thing with those guys. Those guys all had been in bands before. Those guys have all you know they knew the score. They knew like they've seen all the beautiful ships that ran themselves aground on the rocks within music. And they came into it with critical thinking. I was like, man, that is so great that you guys like are doing it right. And, you know, like I love it. You love to see it. And it's something where
it's happening more lately too. I've noticed.
I feel it's what should have been happening all along. Right. Because the idea is we remove these gatekeepers. No, we just brought in different gatekeepers that are more obtuse about what their goals are, but still something stuff of worth can still kind of peep through, like the holes can like come through, and sometimes stuff can like hit a little bit bigger. We're still never gonna have a monoculture like with Nirvana or whatever.
Sure Yeah, I mean that's a once in a lifetime kind of thing, or once in a few lifetimes kind of thing, but I mean still, folks who have been at the grind, like you don't have to be. And maybe it just looks different now that like, you know, I'm pushing 40 and like you know, my peers are all either 40 or pushing 40 or whatever, you know, like that. And then, you know, and some of our friends are older than that too. And who are like experiencing like marginal success now, you know? So I part-time play guitar in Hears, or also known as the Hears Collective. And that's some shit that's like been on a lot of people's radars for a bunch of years. You know, they've been around for about as long as Backslider, about 15 years.
Yeah.
But I
heard about him last year. That's like the first time I heard of him. But
exactly. So Jenna, the singer, she, that fucking curmudgeon-y fucking asshole bitch. She's, I love you, Jenna. she's 42 or something now, 42, 43 or whatever. And like, they're just now, you know, they're on tour with Def Club right now. And they're I play guitar for a tour that we did with the Armed. I fly to Dallas for the first show to be at a fucking House of Blues and you know, do all this kind of stuff that like, when I moved to Philly and I was 26 years old, I was watching Hears play to 10 people in a basement. Now I play guitar for them and we're opening for Orchid in front of 1200 people sold out at the Warsaw in Brooklyn.
Fantastic.
And like, and it's like, oh yeah, everyone in this band's 40, you know?
Yeah.
And that's like, I don't know. I feel like I didn't see that 15 years ago. I feel like the only example I had of bands that were that were getting their blow up while they were already like in their 30s that I knew of from when I was younger was Mastodon.
Yeah, that kicks to kind of happen on later.
When Mastodon blew up, they were, I mean, all this, you know, Lethargy was around from like the early 90s, and like those dudes were in bands for forever, just like everybody we're talking about. But that they opened for Metallica in when they were all in their 40s, and that was like the first time they were like doing, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. I mean, even with Torch, like it took to like Meanderthal, really.
Totally, absolutely. Yeah. And what was that? When did that self-titled shit come out? I was young when that first record came out.
I was
in Florida, so I was right there when all that shit.
Oh, happened. Sure. You knew for because even I was not in Florida. I was in California, but I was like, oh, cool. The new Florida guys have a new band. Right on.
Right.
Why do they spell it that way? I don't know. And I dug that first record. I was like, oh, that's cool. But then when Meanderthal came out, I was like, ooh, girl. Yeah. And then like, I started, hey, have you heard of this Torch band? I'm like, yeah, do you remember when I tried to like talk you into going to the show and you said no?
Yeah.
I remember. The South remembers and the North remembers and Pepper's Farm remembers. Everybody remembers. Thank you. Never forget. Hashtag never forget. Yeah. But no, like that's a good, I mean, I think even then, like, I don't remember how long those guys were. That seems like 100,000 years ago and yesterday at the same time, but like still like there being, I think what we're getting at is like not just, like it used to be like you have your first record and oh, well that fails. Then like band's over. And it's like, no, now you're actually like, there isn't artist development anymore, period. But
right.
Like,
well, totally.
But everybody gets to have artist development. The fact that you always have a shot to like reach your audience, even though it's also kind of like ride the game of chance to see if anybody's going to be paying attention.
Totally. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, that artist development stuff now is just like, can you make it through your first two bands that fall apart in your 20s?
Right. Exactly. like how it's like a prove it moment, right? It's like how bad do you actually want it? And for some people, not that bad. Okay, totally. Cool. Like, yeah,
I get that. Peace. And that's cool.
Sounds honestly, great.
This probably sounds awesome to have that amount of peace and shit, to have that amount of just like general, like mental stability to want to be like, yeah, you know what? I'm home and I'm going to be home and I'm not going to spend money on dumb shit. Like when I think about like how much money I've thrown away just to be able to go on tour or to like buy gear or maintain gear. And
think about how much money is going to like gas and hotels stupid airlines that suck and they treat you like crap. Like, you know, like all that was like, oh, why everybody's making money but us. You know?
Yeah. It comes down to it. It's like, oh, wait, nobody's really making money. Some people are just
exactly. Everybody's just hustling. and that's so as a working band with, you know, not people that aren't 17. Have like adult concerns and adult schedules and things along those lines. You know, it has to, how's the scheduling for that go? Like, is it something where you just, obviously something like Roadburn, I always call that if someone asks if you're a god, you say yes, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yes, we will play that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That was,
we got asked to play with Brainiac. I was like, should we? Yes. Yeah. Yes, we'll do it.
That's
yes, we'll
so
do
fucking
it.
Cool. Hell yeah, you say yes to that. You fucking exactly. Don't say no to that shit.
If I even like hesitated, I was like, yes, I'll figure it out. Sure.
Yeah. For sure.
Like one of my favorite bands of all time. That's a yes, dude, dog. Yeah.
Absolutely. Like one of the greatest to ever do it. Yeah, that's congrats.
Yeah. I think I can clear my schedule for that. Yeah.
Damn right.
Yeah, so
the thing came up. You're supposed to, let's go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, because Roadburn looms large on this show. Like, I remember talking to Mario from Earthless about how like stuff kind of, because I used to see Earthless, and when I say I used to see Earthless, it was like me and like 40 other people, like on the early shows in the Bay Area. And I was like, God, this band is so good. Like, I don't understand like why like people don't vibe with it. And then there was post Roadburn where it's like, oh, people are vibing with it.
Yeah, that's one of the few, you know. And it's like you know, Pat loves to say like everything's a fest now. And whatnot and all that kind of shit, and you know, I don't think too much about that stuff, but he's got a point when he says that. And I think one of the things that I think makes Roadburn special, from just hearing about it from people over the years and then our experience, is that it sits differently, it hits differently, it's respected differently. It's the way in which it's curated doesn't lend itself to like clicks or like just like what's hot type shit. It's like letting you know what's about to be hot often, in a way that's like,
here's stuff you should be paying attention to.
Stuff that's it's shockingly well curated. And you know, it's like everything you see from last year's Roadburn is like killing it this year, and then just this year's river, and it's like next year that's going to be that's going to be the shit everyone's like paying attention to. And
to the point that if you see a band that's playing, you're like, oh, they must, I better check that out. That must be some real deal stuff, you know?
Totally. I mean, when they announced the schedule for the one that we just played, we were the final band on the first day. We were closing the festival. The day of that festival.
Were you really? That's awesome.
And so like, when we saw that, when they released the schedule, and I think they released the schedule like while we were on the tour, I think. So I remember it being like a morning in the van after one of the first shows of tour, being like,
so you knew you were playing, like, but you didn't know where you were at?
We knew that we were playing Thursday. And the band we were on tour with, Body Void, was also playing Thursday.
Then they were
doing a full record playthrough. Those were the only details we knew about what it was. So they released the schedule, and we're like, oh, where is us? Oh, there's us down at the bottom as the final band. And we're like, well, there's no competing bands, which is cool, because we're also the only band that didn't compete with anyone at any point. But we're like, nobody knows who we are. Like, this is going to be like no one's going to stay out later to come see us, was like what we were so stressed out.
Because there's a thing we played once, and the band that played last, I love them to death, but like definitely people were like drinking all day, and it was like they didn't have like the name to keep people around, and I was
totally
them.
Totally, and that's what we were worried about the whole time. And then I remember, you know, the dudes in Interarma are really good friends of ours, and I was talking to TJ, their drummer, and I told him what it was, and he was like, "Dude, that's the same thing that happened to us the first year we played." And I think this year was their third or fourth year playing. Nice. They did four different, completely different sets this year. You know, they were like the big dogs of the festival.
Sure.
He was like, he was like, the exact same thing happened to us. First day, last band.
Yeah.
Like, we were shook, kind of thing. He was like, but it's going to be a party, and it's going to be lit, and everyone is going to be pumped. And it was a 700 cap venue. It was packed to the gills. There was over 100 people outside waiting for people to walk out so they could come in.
Wow.
People in every part of the room singing lyrics to our songs and shit.
That's
like all the
awesome
stuff that I was just like, this is fucking crazy.
This is the thing you dream about when you're like,
totally,
like, you know, a kid. You're like,
absolutely.
This,
I mean,
this is what playing in a band is like. Not really, but sometimes.
Like, I'm the youngest dude in the band also too, right? And I'm also the one who's probably the most like visibly stoked about things. And so like,
sure.
So when that was over, it felt weird almost for like Kevin was like looked at me and Pat, and he's like, well, that was probably the most important show we'll ever play in our lives. And like, and Pat was like, yeah, dude, definitely. And I was just like, yeah, I can't believe what just happened. Like, that was like,
yeah,
actually fucking crazy. Like, just the, you know, it's definitely some shit where I've like watched videos of like fucking, you know, Nirvana in like 91, right before it took off.
Yeah.
And like watching, or like video, you know, I grew up like a huge Green Day head. So like watching videos of Green Day at Gilman back when like Kurt Plunk came out and nobody knew what was about to happen, kind of shit.
Yeah.
Like the energy there was like, I almost feel like that's the energy. This is so cool. Like even if nothing happens after this,
you have
like,
people,
well, holy shit, I got to feel that. And then that was amazing. You know?
You have people on your side in a unique and receptive way that we often don't get in this very cynical and jaded, constantly attention deficit riddled environment, and that's lovely, you know, that's something that kudos for them for building an environment where that can only happen, be like a regular occurrence, and people, you know,
for sure,
but also, you know, they got to say no to a lot of bands, I'm sure.
for sure You know? I was shocked that they allowed us back. We were on the 2020 lineup.
Yeah.
But that was because that was the year that Full of Hell was supposed to be Artist in Residence.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Primitive Man was also doing like two different nights of shit.
Yeah,
on tour with them. So like, yeah, sure. Spenny's on their new band.
We'll be the Nepo band. No problem.
Sure. Yeah. We're like, great. Cool.
Sure.
Like,
that was whatever gets you in the door, man.
The whole tour was just like, yeah, put us under your wing and let's hope something happens.
Yeah,
So the fact that we were able to get on this year was surprising and fucking.
Well, and that goes back to what I was saying earlier, like, you know, like something like that will get you your foot in the door. But if you don't have you have to show them why you're there.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Which I'd like to think we did. I think it went well. People, we sold a bunch of shit and people seem stoked on it. So,
yeah. And that's, you know, those are the things that you can like kind of look as your personal benchmarks for like, okay, you know, maybe you don't want to get into the comparison game of like, this band has this and whatever. And then like, oh, why aren't we doing that? This and that. It's like, no, these are the moments you have to like treasure.
Yeah.
And you have to like hold them close for like any dark times. They have to come around because like it, you want to keep that light shining as much as you can.
Absolutely. Like that's especially at this stage of the game. Like, I don't know. I built my life to be able to kind of try to do this kind of thing as much as I want. Which means that I have to pursue a lot of things outside of iFlies. We have kind of restricted schedules and whatnot. There's only certain times of the year we're able to tour and whatnot. So like, being grateful for any of the times those moments can actually align, you know, is the name of the game for me at this point.
Do you guys practice regularly?
Pat and I live in Philly together, so we usually get together every week. You know, with breaks, like if we, you know, we haven't practiced since we got home from tour.
Sure.
Or wait, no, we did once. We had a show. We did one Philly show since we got back. So we had like a jam before that or whatever. But we're getting back on the weekly shit starting this week actually. But it's mostly me and Pat messing around. We're gonna start working on some new stuff, and then we bring it to Kevin who lives in Baltimore.
Yeah. So it's gonna be a little harder.
Like every month or two or whatever, we'll get together as all three of us and bang it around. But Kevin and Pat are both very busy, especially this time of year. Like we're basically done for the summer, besides for like any sort of one-offs, because Pat can't tour in the summer because he is he's in the Stagehands Union here in Philly.
Oh,
and there's
okay.
He's contracted at this venue called the Mann Center, so he's like basically on contract to be there for every event they have throughout the summer.
Got it.
They pay him very well. If I had a job like that, I'd be a stickler too.
Sure. Also,
it's only because it's summer, shit comes up, and I'm like, dude, we could do this crazy sick tour. And he's like, you know, I can't do it. And I'm like,
yeah,
I get it. Son of a bitch.
That's the adult part of being in a band, unfortunately. Sure. Like,
but also, at least it's not all the time. So, like, when it's not summer, like if it's spring, winter, fall, whatever, we can do whatever the fuck we want. Like, I run a bar with my best friends who are all musicians, and you know, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Mannequin Pussy or Dark Thoughts or Soul Glow or like any of that. Those are all people that work with me at my
bar. All three of those.
And so we take turns going on tour, covering each other, making sure we have job security.
That's awesome. Stuff. I love
so
that.
Like we get to do. I have that built in for being able to do that. Kevin is a record producer and builds guitars. Like if he needs to take time, he can take time. So whenever Pat's like not in the throes of his contract job shit, we can still kind of do whatever we want. So it could be a lot worse, especially for as old as we are.
Sure.
Nobody's got kids. So like that makes it
much
more chill than people I know who try to do this stuff. And also are like, oh yeah, but I have like a 4-year-old at home. And I'm like,
how? How are you doing?
Couldn't imagine, friend.
Sounds exhausting.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about the record. So when do you record the new one? When do you record, like, is it something that you just do all at once? Is it kind of like, cause you're in a position where you can kind of piecemeal it out too, if you felt so inclined.
So it was kind of, we did it in chunks. What was cool about this was the time we were able to take with it. You know, having your bass player be your record producer is a treat.
Yeah.
And then having access to whatever, like he's got an amazing studio. He also lives like down the fucking street from Jay Robbins, who's got his Magpie Cage studio there, which is amazing. So we did all the drums at Magpie Cage.
Just got to see him rock a Jay Robbins band set, and it was pretty freaking cool.
That's super cool. Yeah, he's I've only met him a couple times, but he's always been really sweet to Kevin and you know, let us use his space and whatnot. It sounds incredible. The drums on the record. That's the first thing anybody who's like paying attention to recording stuff says, like, the drums on your record sound crazy. And it's like, yeah, Kevin's an amazing producer, but also like that room at Magpie Cage just sounds so good. It's fucking awesome. And
a powerful drummer in a good sounding room is pretty hard to beat for a rock band.
for sure. And it's like, considering the style,
yeah,
you know, we got to just like, crank the fucking room mics.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it doesn't work for everything, but for what we're doing, it's great. So it's really satisfying to just every fucking snare hit sounds like a gun going off. You know, it's like it fucking rocks. But yeah, the recording of this was we broke it up a little bit more, but it was still mostly in one shot. Like we did, I think we had 2 to 3 days at Magpie Cage doing drums. And then we just went to Kevin's and did and took our time with. Yeah, I think it was like I laid down like a run of guitars and then like went home for like a week or something and then came back for a couple of days, did some more guitars, got to try out lots of shit way more than ever before. Like just kind of like,
let's see how this sounds. Yeah,
totally. And it was just like we're not going to try to pretend like we're not doing what we're doing. So there are certain parts where I was like, yo, on this guitar lead, how do I make it sound like Unsane? and Kevin's like,
turn on the Chris Spencer setting.
Let's see. I've got the exact amp that Chris Spencer uses here.
Yeah,
I have the same model of the same distortion pedal from the same year that he has right here. And, I got a couple of tellies on the wall. Like, let's bust those out and do the thing. And like, oh, cool. That sounds exactly like what we're going
turns
for.
Out.
turns out we have the technology.
Right. We have the know-how.
And just for stuff, I was like, oh, cool. Let's try. Like we did one of the passes of a rhythm guitar tracks with just a cranked VTM all the way up with the mids turned all the way the fuck up. Like Josh Holm lead guitar style, but for a rhythm track with no distortion pedal on it and just like rocked out the whole thing. It sounds so ugly and fucked up in the best possible way that it was like, and it was a thing where it was like, let's do this and maybe we'll throw it away because maybe it's too ugly.
Yeah,
but let's do it because we can.
Let's give you the right kind of too much or the wrong kind of too much.
For sure. But it was the first time in my life where I'd had a situation where that was on the table, where it was like
this
isn't definitely going to work. We don't have time. It was kind of like a, let's do a pass of the whole fucking record with this fucking crazy amp setup.
Yeah, and just see how it sounds.
And then we'll see how it mixes in, and if it doesn't work, we can get rid of it. But if it works, hell yeah, and it worked. And I think it's like a huge part of like the life of the way the record sounds. But it was, I don't know, all of that was really delightful. I felt like when I did my vocals, it had probably been the longest spell of time that I hadn't recorded vocals since we started this band. But I did do a lot of warm-ups at home and shit. Every time I drive around, I got like the little Melissa Cross fucking tape or whatever
do all the warm-up stuff
was the lady that did all the like made all the metalcore dudes sing in like the early 2000s or whatever I had that thing and was like going with it, but I just kind of went in and started doing it and my voice sounds different than it does on the other records,
right?
And it's largely not that intentional. Some of it was like some of the inflections or whatnot or whatever I wanted to like hit a little different, so I was trying to sound, I still wanted to sound like kind of like an old gruff like whiskey voice having dude, but I was like trying to not sound so tough.
It's kind of like, so I would describe it, not that it sounds like Neurosis, but like the difference between like, you know, early mid Neurosis and later period Neurosis, right?
Where
it's like
totally
still the same dude singing, but like it's there's a different kind of intensity with it.
I think I more or less just like over time just learned how to use it better too anyway. The beginning of iFlies was the beginning of my vocal journey, so like so like now I feel like I'm like a lot prouder of the new record vocally because I feel like it sounds fuller. I feel like I sound more like, I guess confident in like the delivery of the stuff, you know?
It sounds like it's, well, any, like the gruffness seems planned and deliberate rather than just like, this is what's happening to come out because I'm doing this as hard as I can.
For sure. And exactly. So that was the thing too, is like kind of it being like, how do I make it still be kind of ugly, but without it being like a, I'm going for 1,000 at every moment. Like I didn't want it to just be like, I'm just screaming at my top of my lungs for every moment. I didn't really want it to sound like that.
People think that they want that, but that's actually exhausting.
It is. It is exhausting. It's exhausting to listen to. And it's exhausting to do, of course, too. And I found this space while we were recording that was kind of like I could project a bit, but it doesn't sound like I'm like trying to fight somebody.
You're not pushing, right? Yeah,
because that's not the vibe I want to get either. It's like, yeah, some of the lyrics, like, you know, like a lot of lyrics are like political stuff that I'm angry about. I am angry or whatever, but it's like I don't want it to come off like it's a, like we're trying to fight. And I feel like that was where I got in my head before about some of my other vocals sounded like, because I've never been like a big like hardcore guy. Like I never liked any of the like, I don't know what people call metalcore stuff or whatever. I try to be nicer with the language or whatever, but I never got into
it. Just the uniform.
Right. And all that stuff works for what it is. Cause that's some of that stuff too is supposed to be like, I'm in your face. Like I'm supposed to be like a rabid dog. Like, this is supposed to be like a punch to your face sonically or whatever.
If it sounded like Neil Sedaka on vocals, it wouldn't work. You know what I mean? There's no way. Totally. Yeah.
Totally. I think about like the Coalesce thing a lot, right? Because Bummer did that last record they did where they had dude from Coalesce singing on it, and it like sounds cool, like works for the part and does all the thing, whatever. And I was like, man, this record would be so dumb if all the vocals were just like
that. it would be like. Oh, it's a band that does that thing, I guess. It's a dude's yelling band. Okay, great.
But I think this was also the first time that Pat recorded drums to a click in his entire life.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And that was really fucking, I think it was hard for him. I don't envy what he dealt with to try and make that happen, especially for this kind of like a dragging kind of music like I thought it was. But it really helped because we really wanted to put an emphasis on keeping the song slower. Because we didn't want to lose the grooves, and we didn't want to lose the drag that kind of makes things feel like hopeless and whatnot. And it's really easy to do because we all come from fast music backgrounds. Again, so like Kevin threw it out there in the group chat one day. It was like, hey, why don't you start practicing to a click and we should record to one? And he was kidding about the record to one, but didn't let him know that. He was just like, if we get him to practice to a click for a little bit, we'll do the thing.
Then he'll get in the mindset, and it'll be more naturally, like be less inclined to speed up and rush,
totally.
And so on and so on. Yeah.
Well, what he ended up recording to was click tracks that I made to demos that I had made, because I programmed drums for all the songs at one point, trying to as much to base on what he was doing as possible or whatever, but just for like reference stuff for us to practice to, for me to write lyrics to, whatever. And then I put the clicks in really loud, took the drums out, just left guitars and the clicks, and that's what he practiced at home to. And then we got to the studio, he was just like, I'm just going to record to those. And I was
fantastic.
Shit. So I didn't even play guitar when he did drums on it, which it was totally alien and weird to me.
But right.
Then when it came time to do it, I was like, oh, this is, we've already never been this locked before. This is so
right. It's so awesome. A shortcut to being super tight because you already, you know, that's how it started. Exactly.
Yeah,
which is funny because sometimes that stuff can change too, right? Like I definitely have situations where you write a demo and it's like, oh yeah, that's so cool, and then like you play it faster, it's like, oh, that's better faster, or like, oh, that's better slower, or whatever. And that is always kind of like the weird like discovery part of being in a band. But it's interesting that like in this age we have where you can demo something out that does have, you know, gathered, like, you know, not real drums real necessarily, but you have like stuff that's like the framework, the skeletal structure of the song that's right there, that to have it be like a through line through all of it to the finished product, that's kind of interesting. I mean,
totally.
That's, and again, I like the idea of sort of pushing the definition for how a band can operate, right? Like it's not just like the Monkees.
Absolutely. And it's fun to approach things in different ways. Like, I don't know if we'll ever do that again. Like,
sure.
It may not even be necessary for him to record to a click on our next record, because who knows if the materials are going to be.
It may not even make sense for it, right?
Totally. Sure. We'll take it as it comes. But it was cool to have like a different way to go about it. And I think it put all our heads in a different place, and I think it's helped us out creatively. And like, we kind of surprised ourselves a little bit. I know Pat was surprised as shit at how good it came out. We were all done. I was like, dude, you fucking killed it. And he's like, this shit is crazy. I've been stressing over playing to a click for weeks. And it's like, blah, blah. And it's like, and I'm like, dude, I'm like, playback, like, duh.
Yeah.
You murdered it. And he's like, nodding his head, looking along, like, yeah, shit. Okay. Yeah, we did. All right. This is fucking sick. And I'm like, yeah, dude. Like, that works.
Jerry Fuchs, like, Sebastian stuff. Like,
yeah.
Where it's like, how does he do that? How does he freaking do that? Let's do this if you don't mind. Since we're talking about the record anyway, do you want us to go through and do a song by song on it so we can talk a little bit about each of the ones? And this could be just like what we're literally already doing, which is recording notes. It could be, you know, where the title came from, lyrics, et cetera, et cetera. There's no right or wrong answers or anything with it. So let's start off with Trepidation Summer.
Okay. So Trepidation Summer is that's one of the more kind of like, I always say I kind of put my lyrics for this band into sort of two categories of. There's the serious songs that make sense, and then there's the ones that don't. This is one of the ones that kind of don't. It's about a lot of one to drill a hole into your head for lots of different reasons. One of which being like, you know, the theory of, or not totally a theory, but the idea and ancient practice of trepanation, which like drilling a hole in your head so kind of like you could be high forever, supposed to expand your connection to. Like the collective consciousness around you, and I also sort of like you like care about that stuff, and I've always been interested in like psychedelia and whatnot, but also wanted to sort of bring it forward into also relating to just like the pressure that sits in my head as like a man that lives in this world that drives me crazy.
Say less. I got you. awesome. Sleep Forever. How about that one?
Sleep Forever is one of the more serious ones. That one is it's a murder fantasy about the oligarchs.
It's pretty direct, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I'm a vehement hater of capitalism, especially the version of it in which we are forced to live under in the society. I don't believe that poverty needs to exist for anything else to exist, and therefore I find it like inherently fucked up and immoral to be a hoarder of extreme wealth. Talking about the billionaires here specifically. The millionaire conversation can come along when all the billionaires are dead. Not so worried about the millionaires, because the difference between a million and a billion is so vast that it's nearly unfathomable when you realize that you live your 1 millionth second on your third day of life, and you live your 1 billionth second somewhere in your 20s.
Right.
You think about that in the terms of pie and how much pie is available, and there's only so much pie, and people have that much of it, and then you wonder why we got people in the fucking streets who can't get anything together because they've got no legs to stand on. These things are directly connected, and I think those people deserve death for hoarding the wealth that they do. And I think that we should put it on display so that we can all see it, so that we can all learn our lessons, possibly. I also know that may not work. We've tried this before, but this is my anger. This is my anger fantasy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, you can put it on the TV, right? Like, you can make a streaming series, get a Patreon for it. Sure, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Why not? We've done dumber things, definitely.
For sure.
Tuck and Roll. I'm sorry, Highland Dam, so I know where we're at.
That's good. Tuck and Roll is a bit more abstract again, for the most part. The lyrics, the kind of the meanings behind the lyrics on that are a bit back and forth between flirting with like suicidal ideation of like my youth, which for the record is not something I struggle with currently. It's been a very long time since I have. But sort of like the main line, the tuck and roll into a black hole, is kind of like that, not like wanting to die, but that kind of like being okay with it as like an inevitability slash like, look at this world that we're in, look at the ways in which we're forced to live and the ways in which we treat each other and all this kind of stuff. Like, I don't know, if we're getting sucked into a bad black hole, I'm ready to tuck and roll into that bitch if it's time to go. But you know, I'm also happy to be here and share smiles for as long as we can as well. And I think that I also ripped the lyrics from D beat song that I wrote during pandemic time. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't have lyrics for this song, and I was like, I'll just take that one. That song's never coming out. It's kind of a different thing. Also, musically, I was sort of trying to rip off Wrong, because Low Key Wrong is my favorite noise rock band in history. And I also love saying that because, like, people who get upset about this kind of music are like, think that only the 90s matter and whatever.
Right, exactly.
I think Wrong out helmeted Helmet and then kind of just like made like the coolest and catchiest and weirdest tunes in like this weird style music.
After a while, Helmet wasn't even doing that, you know, they stopped doing it. Totally, no one else was using it.
For sure, and them being old Florida boys and whatnot.
Yeah, I was gonna say Florida solidarity. I'm sure somebody do it today. I'm sure.
For sure.
Draining Pus.
So Draining Pus is the first time in my life I ever wrote a song about a partnership situation, but that was a breakup song. I was in a relationship for almost 10 years up until, like, I don't know, a couple months before we were writing this record. And I don't know, that one I just sort of addressed how I was feeling and why I got out of it. Mostly just personal stuff of like feeling like, kind of feeling like I was becoming a burden on my partner through differences in lifestyle and how that was sort of increasingly going in different directions and whatnot. Kind of felt like it was, as the song says, rip the bandage and watch the pus drain. It was time to be like, all right, I got to rip this bandage off and get out of here and try to drain and heal. And hopefully both of us are better people for it.
Evocative imagery. Yes.
Yeah.
Feeding Regression.
Feeding Regression is a song that sort of influenced by my job at this bar that I work at. Also just like kind of influenced by sort of this, like the current state, especially at that time, of discourse around a lot of things that I care about, mostly like queer and race related stuff, mm-hmm. largely transgender rights and discourse and respect and all the kind of stuff. But the thing worth noting the most and what influenced me on the lyrics on that is there's this man that lives around the corner from where I'm sitting right now. I'm opening the bar late right now, so that we for doing this.
Oh, really?
It's fine. But he lives around the corner. He's this towny guy.
Tell him to tune in.
He definitely doesn't know how, but he's dude in his 60s, old deep Kensington, Philadelphia towny guy, like Trump dude. Couldn't have less in common with him when it comes to like our on paper ideals and like all this kind of stuff and whatever. And when me and my friends took this bar over, he was still coming around because this is a neighborhood bar. And we struck a friendship. And you know, we host a lot of shows here, a lot of punk shows and stuff like that. A lot of people who like book them or like run doors for them or whatever, like trans folks and just like queer folks in general, that are things that he doesn't really know anything about, never really came in contact with or any of that kind of stuff. And there have been plenty of times where I had to tell him to like check him on certain language he would use around certain things or whatever. But he would like always listen and like always try to move forward as best he could as a respectful person. And so when we would talk about some of those things, he said something to me that rung true to me so hard. He was said something about how he doesn't get it, right? I was talking about like something to do with like with trans stuff. And he's like, you know, I really don't get it. And I'm like kind of trying to get it. And then he paused for a second. He's like, but I don't really have to either, do I? And I was like, no, I guess you don't. And he was like, you don't have to understand to show respect.
Holy shit.
It floored me. It fucking
floored me. Holy shit. That's amazing. Like, totally, yeah.
Like coming from this dude who was like defending why he voted for Trump like an hour earlier. Yeah. You know what I mean? It dawned, and that's basically what that song is about. It's kind of like it's got some of the lyrics are throwing venom at people who just need to be assholes because they don't understand something, or whatever. But then also like it was all it's sort of influenced by, and there's a part in the song where I just say like you don't have to understand, just show respect. And I took that from him because it rang so true to me. Like that's the thing. I don't need some 67-year-old dude to understand the nuances of fucking. Of gender and right. the ways in which those and keep up with where that national conversation is going and like doing all that stuff. Just don't be a fucking asshole. Why you got to be shitty to people?
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
You don't have to make people who already are in a position to feel bad on a daily basis feel worse about themselves.
Totally. You don't have to make it worse. Right. You don't need me jawing on and on about the thing. That's only probably going to make you more sour on it than it really is. Right. Maybe just like read the room around you. And if people are fucking nice to you, be nice to them point blank. You know what I mean? Yeah. And when someone corrects you on a matter of respect, I'm like, I understand that's what it was. There's another thing that I liked about him a lot too, is he never took it like anyone was coming at him. If he used a wrong pronoun or something, it was like, oh, by the way, that's, you know, she instead of he or whatever kind of thing. Like, oh, I didn't know. And I'm like, yeah, no, you didn't. That's cool. Like, that's why I'm telling you. And like, that's that.
Right. You don't have to get all defensive about it. You just course correct. Right.
Like, and it's kind of my thing too, where it's like, if he can do it, you're just an asshole.
Yeah. At some point, you're just an asshole. I agree. Yeah. It's like you're performatively putting zero effort into it when like really like 1% would be fine.
Totally. Really,
you know, really. Making a choice. That's great though. I actually love to hear stories like that. What's that behind your ear?
All right. So what's that behind your ear is a sort of a word salad in tribute to my absolute best friend in the world, Eric Montanez. Dog rest his soul. He passed away the year before last. We grew up together. He was like, we started playing music together on the same day. We got Mohawks on the same day when we decided we were punks. Aww. Like it was a whole, you know, it was all that we did all of it together. We started our first punk bands together. We started our first grindcore bands together. We went on our first tours together. We did all the shit. He passed away. And, most of that song is basically just made up of things. A couple of them are my broken down feelings about like, what am I going to do without you? But a lot of it is just shit that he had said or shit that people had said to or about him, specifically the "What's that behind your ear?" line. Was he would always, this is dumb as hell, he would always, we were always avid weed smokers, and he would always have a blunt rolled and ready to go, and we would be out somewhere to the spot, and he would go up to a friend of ours who had just arrived on the scene and be like, "Oh, what's that behind your ear?" "It's a blunt," and light it up.
Nice.
And that was like, oh, and there was a video of it, of him doing that to somebody, and the distorted voice thing right in front of that song is him saying to my friend Vivek, "Hey, Vivek, what's up behind your ear?" And the song starts. That's was the thing.
That's awesome.
Also, the final line, "There's shit everywhere," was from when we were like 13 and his sister stepped in dog shit and like got it all throughout his house. And his mom was so mad because she had like just gotten the floors redone or some shit like that, and was like, "Oh my God, Rachel, come on, there's shit over here, there's shit over here, there's shit over here." And Eric was like, Mom, can I say it? Can I say it? And she's like, "What?" And he's like, "There's shit everywhere."
Fantastic.
But yeah, that's that one.
and what a great moment comedically as well as being accurate. So yeah. There you go. Tearaway face plaster.
Tearaway face plaster is thematically would fit very well on Tubble Lard because it's very much just influenced by the use of psychedelic drugs. Tearaway face plaster was something that I wrote down on an acid trip one time. And it took many meetings at the time, you know, when you're looking too hard for meetings and things. That was a thing that always stuck with me. But that's more or less various descriptions of the ways in which my body and brain have felt while taking psychedelic drugs.
Fair enough. Yeah, it brings forth all kinds of giallo and horror movie sort of connotations as well.
Totally.
Never mad at. Bananarchy Zoo. That's the one that has the video with the lights, right?
Yes. The Elvis ripoff video.
The Elvis lights. Yeah.
So Bananarchy Zoo is a sort of, it's my love and hate letter to Florida. It is about a place that has a huge part of my heart that I will absolutely never live in ever again. but will always have its mark on me for better or worse. And the song Bananarchy Zoo, again, is a reference to my best friend, Eric. There's the famous Doom 7-inch Monarchy Zoo. And Eric was a self-proclaimed bananarcho horticrusty because he was a
self-proclaimed
horticrust bananarcho punk. He grew fruit trees and tons of tropical plants. He had an amazing garden in every house he ever lived in. He was obsessed with plants. He always said that he was gonna die in the swamp, and he did. Bananarchy Zoo was what we always called his gardens. It's like, we were entering the Bananarchy Zoo. But I also always sort of referred to Florida as the Bananarchy Zoo.
Sure. Yeah.
And so that's what it's about. Also, that's the song that's like tuned to the almost to the floor tuning. Figured it was appropriate to be the Florida song.
Especially if you're in a situation where, if you're shouting out Florida, you might as well do it.
Totally. And the fucked up distorted saxophone bits throughout the record / like ends the record at the end of that song are from videos that I had friends of mine send me of Eric randomly busting out his saxophone drunk at parties and just like playing like somber sax tunes for people in the middle of a party. And I managed to get them sent to me. So I used those to be on the record.
Oh, fantastic. And this is that. And tell me about, so the art, you got some trepidation going on.
The artwork we're wicked stoked on. John Herndon from Tortoise, the drummer from Tortoise, he did this artwork. Knocked it out of a goddamn park. So I had this idea. It was a pretty specific idea. I had a couple of paragraphs written out of what I wanted the artwork to look like, front and back. Because I was also really pulling for the record to be called Trepanation Summer. I thought it was witty. That didn't love it, and we didn't come up with a better one. So I was like, fuck it, we'll go self-titled. Which I feel like kind of works too, because I feel like it's sort of like, it's like us being us in the best way. Might as well be a self-titled, whatever.
Yeah, it's a statement of intent. The only thing that you didn't do.
Well put.
The only thing you didn't do is you didn't have a song called "iFlies," which of course,
yeah, true.
You know, the band's named off a song. So if you're ever going to do an iFlies cover, Melvin's cover of "iFlies," then this would be the one to put it on. "iFlies" by "iFlies" on "iFlies."
I have this weird feeling that Buzzo's annoyed enough by our existence if he knows about it.
I can tell you Dale does, and I can tell you how I know that. But
excuse me.
I told him.
That's
tight. But I don't know. I couldn't tell you on Buzz. I'll give you the full report if I remember to ask him, which I probably won't.
That's funny. I'm almost scared. I'd had this artwork description handed out to a couple of different artists that I know locally that are friends of mine.
Uh-huh.
And they were both like, yeah. And it was mostly because the aesthetic that I wanted was unapologetically to be like Pettibone. Like I was like,
yeah. Like I'm totally.
That was the end. That was kind of the idea. I wanted that sort of look. But I didn't want it to look like Black Flag ripoff art either, because like that's
which is hard because all of his stuff is like so tied with that band that even with the off stuff, it's like, well, that makes sense because it's sort of like a spiritual successor to that. But most bands can't get away with it, really. I mean, you got there's Minutemen and you got Black Flag, and that's
So I was like, I didn't want it to be like too much, because also it was like, you know, there were the ideas of like, do we like make it smaller and put it in a box with like a border around it and do the thing. I was like, okay, that'd be too close.
right, exactly. Then you're just like, come on, guys.
Yeah, like I was like, I don't want to do this because I want it to look like a Black Flag record. It's just the art that I want to see for it, I think, will be best suited in that sort of style. So,
which is not that like there isn't a corollary. I mean, like Side 2 of My War, right? I mean, like, you know, it's not that far afield, but
anyway. Right, totally. Excellent point. The other two artists that had looking at it, kind of, they both came to a point where they kind of like felt intimidated by it. I think it was because I was maybe too specific about what I wanted.
Got it.
So it kind of fell through. And then we were talking to Bettina about it, and she was like, I got just the guy. John from Tortoise can do exactly what you're talking about, and he'll do it great. And like, just like, trust me on this, we'll get it popping. And she connected us. I sent him my list of ideas. And it was like a week and a half later, he sent over a slightly more basic version of what it was. And he was like, let me know if I should keep running with this or if I should run with something else. And he was like, this and like the stuff on the back as well, like the kit thing. And I was just like, oh shit. I have no notes.
Yeah. Looks pretty good, man.
This is literally like finish up to where you feel good and let's go. And it was delightful. And it's been cool because this has been a really hard band for art. I've always been really lucky in that in Backslider, like Logan is a visual artist and he does all the art. He writes all the lyrics, does all the art, does everything. It's all tied together. It all comes from his brain. And then other bands I've been in have always had like one really good visual artist in it.
Yeah. It's a nice thing to have, right?
Totally. And this time we're like, and like we all kind of have different ideas of what we like. And so it's often hard to figure out artwork for this band. But we all kind of got this and we were all like, yeah, this is it.
Two things. So fantastic. So that's iFlies. That's the record. Two quick Johnny Herndon stories. First of all, Johnny Herndon as Johnny Machine played in Poster Children for a while. People do not remember that he played in Poster and ripped. Poster Children.
I did not know that. That's cool as hell.
Daisy Chain reaction to Tool the Man era, so like early 90s. He also tried out to be in the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Really? To be the drummer?
To be the drummer in Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Shit.
And it's an amazing story. If you listen to my friend Randy Randall's Hyphenate podcast, that episode, I was kind of blown away because it's pretty hilarious. And it ended up being the Chad Smith, right? That's the guy that's a.
Yeah.
And like, it's just a great story. I could not begin to do it justice, but you think of Tortoise, like I just, you know, think of like Tortoise is Tortoise. They're that. Totally. I compare other bands to them. I don't think
totally right. So, exactly, you compare other bands. Yes, that's I see him as only that because that's all I've ever known. Tortoise has been around for like 20 something years.
And the only thing I really know about him because I'm a West Coast guy is the way I heard from Paho, right? Who like played in that band for a while. And like he gave me some context, but still, it's like. To me, it's like, well, all I know is they're like mysterious art. Oh, it's a mysterious looking, you know, like whatever. And so it's like, when I, it almost didn't compute for me. I was like, he was in Poster Children? For real? Like, I love Poster Children, but that doesn't, like... But then I think about, like, well, you don't just have to play one kind of music, too. I mean, you know, like, it's totally fine, as it turns out. But yeah, cool visual art. I actually did not know that was him. That's awesome, because it's a...
Yeah, it's a killer.
It's a very eye-catching cover, as they say.
It's funny how people can have a hard time connecting that someone would do like different things or whatever. I even do that too sometimes, being surprised by that shit. Whereas it just happened to me the other day. You know, I don't get like noticed out in public very much or anything, but I was going to my Backslider played a show with Weekend Nachos in Philly the other day. And we had just played, and then I walked over to the beer store that was across the street to grab a couple of drinks for me and my girlfriend. And so he was in there and was just like, "Hey, you just played Backslider, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Does anybody ever tell you you look like the guy from iFlies?"
Oh, I get that a lot. Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, "That's actually also me." And he was like, "No fucking way. That's what I said, but my friend talked me out of it and said there was no way that it was the same dude." And he like took a picture and like sent it to his friend. He's like, "Dude, it's him. It's the same guy." And I was like, "That's so funny." Because he made a comment that was like, "It's just wild that you would do both of these things." And I was like, "Is it?" And then I was like, "Oh yeah, I guess." I was like, "Oh yeah, I guess it would seem that way because it's like a lot different."
Because they're very different. Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's so. First of all, my friend Matt Armstrong coined that term as "rockignized" when you are recognized for rock.
I recently heard that as well, so it's making its rounds. It's making its rounds.
Yeah. I mean, it's, when I heard that, I was like, "Perfect, no notes." That's exactly what that is. Well, and also people get really like, especially when they vibe with a certain thing, they get really stuck into like what the idea of what that thing is. Mm-hmm. And so when people cross genres or do different things, it can be hard for people that, I mean, there's a lot of people listening to this show don't realize I play in a band. I'm like, I don't know how. Yeah. I like mentioned in the intro of the show.
Yeah,
like, joined for 24 years. I mean, like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, but then there's also people that like will come to shows that, you know me from the show, and then they're always like, "Hey man, you know, I really like the show." I'm like, "Cool, you don't have to whisper. It's okay."
Yeah, you it'd actually be great if you told people. Yeah,
exactly. Tell everybody you know. Like, it doesn't have to be like a dirty secret. I get it. Podcast, like Jesus. But you know, it's also it's a busy world, and you know, I feel like there's all these communication tools that make connection easier, but in a way, it almost makes it like harder sometimes as well. Mm-hmm. So, and nobody wants to be embarrassed. Be like, "Oh, that's a totally different dude," you know.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
Anyway, Jake, this has been awesome, man. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate you. Congratulations on the record that came out, you know, 6 months ago. Sorry, it took a while to make this happen.
Hey, it's all good. It's all good. Life's been moving fast. It feels like 2 years ago and 2 weeks ago at the same time. So
still a good record, still available through Thrill Jockey, iFlies, Bandcamp.com. You got that shit that, well, summer, so we've canonically established you're not going to be doing too much touring, but you're playing with Horrors coming up at TVI, so New York listeners should go out to that. What else, anything else you want folks to know about before we
I think other than that, I haven't been told that I can't say this, and it probably won't matter within a couple of days anyways, but the day before the current announced Coalesce and Cave-In show in New York, we are playing the next one that's getting announced when it sells out.
Fantastic. That's awesome. That's awesome. Hey, you know what? If Dwayne Dennison can not just once, but twice, like, soft announce Jesus Lizard stuff, I think he can do it.
Yeah, right? Yes, yeah,
so
there you go.
So
yeah,
there you go. You're in good company is what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah,
Jake Spencer, great man. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Hope to see you soon.
Thank you.
And you've heard the show. Last thing I ask is only canned question, so choose to interpret it however you like. But why do you do what you do?
Because I don't know how to do anything else. Nothing else makes me feel any good. So it is what it is.
Right on, brother. Appreciate you.
Dude, appreciate you, man. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
Take care. See you down the line.
All right, later, man.
There goes Jake Smith. I am out of practice. Good Lord. Let's listen to one of the songs off this fantastic record. Let's listen to Draining Pus. That sounds like a good one to go.
Yeah.
There you go. Draining Pus by iFlies off of the record iFlies that features Jake Smith and them iFlies boys. And if you are listening to this quickly, you can be at one of those shows you mentioned. Otherwise, got to wait till fall to go see him play. More than likely. But I'd like to thank Jake for being on the show. iFlies.bandcamp.com. It's a thrill jockey. You can get the records. Name of this show is Code Neutron's Protonic Reversal. Thank you so much for listening to it. Oh, man, this is the first outro since Steve died. Damn. This show's called Protonic Reversal. This airs Thursdays, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, 6 Mountain, 5 Pacific, streaming live on YouTube and Twitch. Podcasted later everywhere, always free, no ads, no sponsors, no kidding. But if you like the show, patreon.com/protonicreversal. $1 a month helps support the show and gets episodes sooner.
As we come to the close of our broadcast day.
And thanks to everybody for sharing the show around, liking, subscribing to your platform of choice. All that helps people discover the show. And it's just a darn nice thing to do. So thank you very much. A bunch of good stuff coming up. I'm
signing off.
I'm doing more things.
Mr. and Mrs. America.
I'm actually doing 3 shows with the band Dead from Australia on the West Coast next week. But yeah, I got some good stuff coming up. Stay tuned to it. Back at it in the summer.
I've got 50,000 watts of power.
Yeah. Just stay safe out there, you know? That's really what it comes down to. I'd like to thank everyone for this 11th year of operating, for caring, for paying attention. I appreciate it.
This microphone turns sound into electricity.
Anything else? No, I don't think so. Just stay safe out there and
can you hear me now?
Check you later.
Out on Route 128, the dark and lonely. I got my radio on. Can you hear me now? Welcome to my top 10. I'd like to thank our sponsor. But we haven't got a sponsor. Not if you were the last man on Earth. She was prepared to prove it. This one goes out to a special girl. There is no special girl! It's the end of radio! The last announcer plays the last record. The last what? Leaves the transmitter. Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
really broadcasting if there's no one there to receive? It's the end of radio. As we come to the close of our broadcast day. Radio.